The Open Door of Emptiness. Chapter 2. Love and Impermanence. Part 3. Two Paths. It is important to know the difference between clarity and knowledge. In this context, clarity is the basic facticity of what is occurring. Just this. What it is, what it means, is something you are introducing into what is occurring. You are selecting and editing and organizing from this field of experience something that makes sense to you. So you are employing your interpretive matrix as the validator of truth. Here we have a crossroad, two pathways. One is to stay open and relaxed with whatever comes, even if it seems mad or stupid or meaningless. See it almost like a dream. Dreams are often very strange. Patterns arise and go. If you stay with non-intervention, you start to see that this is the intrinsic lucidity of the mind. This is the mind's way of showing. Because it is not my mind, it doesn't have me as the central focus. The mind is open, ungraspable, and not a personal possession. Like the mirror, it shows hospitality to whatever is occurring. This basic hospitality of the mind is very important because it allows the unimpeded clarity to show itself. Otherwise, if you apply your own frame of reference to this clarity, it may not make much sense because you're trying to pull experience back into the familiar constructs that reassure you that you know what is going on. The key thing is to just relax, be open, and be with whatever it is. Buddhism describes 6 different realms of existence. We can and have been born in each and every one of these realms. The culture we're currently living in may not be the culture we're reborn in. If you are reborn as a woman in Afghanistan, you would be accustomed to wearing a burqa. Our values, who we take ourselves to be, is created in this historic moment. The political scenario could change very easily, and people who have found freedom may find themselves back in a box. Who is keeping us safe? We are hanging on threads all the time. When we see this, we realize that this construct of ego identity, of me knowing who I am and how I want to live and what I want to do, we realize it is all theater. What is the ground of my being? If we take it to be a socio-political economic construct, that due to the actions of many people over many lifetimes, we find ourselves in a culture which, at the moment, allows certain freedoms and makes certain demands, you can see that this is not firmly established. That is why Buddhist texts say that you can have a human life now, but in the next life, who knows where you will be? If your sense of yourself is as an identity, a construct, a narrative storyline, then it is dependent on all these factors staying in place. When they shift, it's very different. Buddhism is concerned to go beneath and beyond the limitation of our personal identity, to see that awareness, the clarity which illuminates every moment of our existence, is not a construct, is not an aspect of our personality, is not something generated by brain chemistry. It is the intrinsic light of the mind. When we rest in that, we find an indestructible refuge that is unchanging. It is the clarity of the openness of the mind. The energy of the mind, the potential of the mind, shows many different patterns. None of them is stable. None of them has a true essence. What you take yourself to be is the interplay of your potential within this energetic field. You can experience that for yourself. For example, look at how you make choices. A choice could be quite neutral, such as, "Oh, I'll eat that." Or it could be, "Oh, I'd really like to eat that." Or, "Yuck, I would never eat that." It is good when you notice a strong reaction to the object. When you decide that something is good, it is because you like it. The goodness of the object is in your liking of the object. If the object were inherently good, everyone would like it, but they don't. Although you think that the goodness is in the object, it is actually in the mind. When you stop projecting values onto the objects of the world, then you see the simple clarity of everything. When the mind is forgetful of its own ground, it arises as ignorance and is permanently involved in selecting, attributing value, and so on. This is mental activity. When you relax the mind and don't project meaning out onto the field starts to show itself. This also is something that you can start observing for yourself. How busy you are, judging, assuming, defining. The more you define the object, the more you define yourself. And the more you define yourself, the more you cut yourself off from your open potential and get limited in a very narrow bandwidth. Stupidity. From the Buddhist point of view, our problems arise because we have adopted a central point of reference in the self. For example, in this room, the ceiling is held up by pillars, and we can say that the pillars are hard and strong. We know that because if we push them or punch them, they are stronger and harder than we are. So my embodiment becomes the checking framework for the qualities of the pillars. The pillar is not hard for some machines. The hardness of the pillar is relational. If the time comes to knock down this building, it won't take long because they will use machines which are much stronger than the concrete. So the pillars are hard and strong relative to my human body, but not to the steel tip of the destroying machine. Knowing this helps us to see that whenever we make a statement about anything, it has always got a missing part. The soup was good for me. If I was an insect and flew into the hot soup, the soup would be my death. Not so good. So the soup is good for me. For me. For me. This is not to emphasize that I am an important person, but merely to point out that all experience includes me. I don't have access to objective truth. My world is irreducibly subjective. subject and object arise together. As I participate in the world is revealed to me through my participation. So, if I am hungry, the food is likely to taste better. The world is flavored. The colors of the world, the moods of the world, are revealed through how our experience arises for us. This unique specificity of my flavors is my existence. This is why, if you want to understand another human being, you have to spend a lot of time with them. If you don't do that, you just put them in a category. Here in Warsaw, I'm staying in a flat with several cats. I don't know about cats, I just think cats. But the owner can explain about their psychology, how this one is shy, and this one does this, and that other does that. Because of her loving eye towards the cats, the different qualities of the cats are revealed. Farmers know that their different cows have different characters, different qualities, and different modes. When I see a cow in a field, the cow is just a cow. This is my stupidity. It is enough for me to say it's a cow and put it in its box. Because I know it is a cow, and I know that I'm not very interested in cows, my curiosity ends here. In Buddhism, this is what is meant by stupidity. Buddhism talks of the five poisons. The first one is this kind of mental obscuration that functions as an assumption. A cow is a cow. This is my obscuration. If I were interested in the cow, I'd watch how it walks, how it breathes, how it relates to the other animals. Most cows don't mind having sheep in the field, but some cows are not so happy. It makes a big difference for some of them, but for me, it's just a cow. Once you start observing your own mind, you see how you make yourself stupid in relation to the world. The world shows itself as a richly textured experience, full of detail. But when you put it into a little box, you stop looking. In this context, stupidity means falling asleep in the concept. If I know that this animal in the field is a cow, I am satisfied that I know what it is. Maybe I don't know anything about cows, but if I know it's a cow, that is enough. The label obscures the specificity of the individual animal so that we do not need to attend to the details of its life. Projecting names onto objects makes us blind. In Gompo Wangyal's text, he says that everything we see, everything we would ever encounter, whether living or not living, absolutely everything, is simply a name put by our mind. There is no inherent existence in any phenomena. We have the potential of what is arising as shape and color, and then the concept allows us to add adjectives and adverbs and do all kind of associations, but it is your mind. What you encounter is the movement of your own mind. What and how we love. To see things as they are is the heart of Buddhism. To see people as they are, warts and all. It is not an insult to people to observe that they have some bad qualities. We all have limitations. If you are honest about the patterns and limitations of the people you encounter, then you can work with them. But if you deny the limitation, if you want to pretend to yourself that this person is other than what is right in front of you, then you are deluded. This is the relational form that Gompo Wangyal speaks about. Everything you see is only a name put by your own mind. Therefore, you just have to really see what is the relation between the name and the form which is there. If you take the name to mean what you believe the name indicates, then it is difficult to see the actual phenomenon. The phenomenon is what is showed. Sometimes women in my therapy practice talk about their partners. If I ask what their impression was on their first date, they say something like, "Oh, I didn't much like him. But then as we were talking, I thought, well, maybe there could be something here." So you were seducing yourself, and once you were seduced by yourself, it was very easy for him to seduce you. Your guts said no, but then you thought, oh well, I've nothing to do this weekend, so why not give him a chance? Then thoughts start going around and around. You self-hypnotize, and you become convinced that he is whoever you think he is, that your thoughts have got direct contact with the truth of this person. In fact, your thoughts have covered this person with your projections. This is why relationships between people are often very difficult. We imagine and project rather than check out. Your own mind is always part of your experience. You're not experiencing the objective truth of what is there. What arises for you is your experience of this building, this tree, this flower. This person is my imagination of this person. The you that I encounter is you for me, and you are not only you for me, you are you for you, you for your mother, for your boss, for your friends. Each of these people gets a different you. On the basis of this partial perception, which has already been wrapped in your hopes, fears, and assumption, you think you've really seen the person. I know you don't like him, but I see something different in him. He's really nice when you get to know him. Of course, when you get to know someone, you're not exactly getting to know them. You're getting to know your image of who you think they are. We don't love other people. We love images of other people as created in our own mind. That is very strange. Who are you? Who I think you are? Even if you tell me who you are, I would only hear that in terms of how I can hear. Which is to say, if I hear what you are saying, it's not that I'm a piece of paper that is having something written on it. I hear what you are saying with my ears, my dishonest, twisty, editing ears, my selective ears. The purpose of this is to ask you to investigate whether you really have objective access to the world. Because if you don't have objective access, if you only have subjective access, and your subjectivity is very cloudy, then you are lost in the forest, and Granny's house is far away. Night is coming, wolves are howling. Oh, this is a nice guy. He's really cute. Oh, Little Red Riding Hood. This is what is meant by reflection. Seeing how you cheat yourself. This is not an insult. It is an invitation to start to free yourself from the burden of assumptions. Assumptions can be personal and they can be national. It seems that nowadays there is a return of nationalism. My country, right or wrong? My country is called Great Britain. Great as in big. But we also think of it as great, as in very good. However, historically, it has not been very good. And like most European countries, we're discovering many skeletons in the cupboard. Things we cover up things we don't want to know. From the Buddhist point of view, it's useful to reflect and see that the constructive factors which give rise to identity are often not very healthy. So, how are we going to be honest? By getting access to that which is not conditioned by thought, the mind itself. 5 questions to pose about the mind. What is the mind? Is the mind something similar to all the other things I know? If we look around the room, we see that everything has a shape, a colour, and a size. If we go outside and walk in the streets, we see the same. Everything has a shape, colour, and size. So the first question is, does your mind have shape and colour? The second question is, does your mind have size? Everything in this room has come from somewhere. Everything in this room is situated somewhere. We're all located somewhere. When we go outside, everything is in its place. The bird is in the sky. The car is on the road. The car has come from some place. The bird has come from an egg. The third question is, where does the mind come from? Does it come from anywhere? Everything is somewhere, rests somewhere, seems to stay somewhere, even if only for a short time. The fourth question is, where does your mind rest? Is your mind inside your body? You've been told that your mind is inside your head, in your brain. This is an idea. What is the truth of this idea? Who is having the idea? The mind reveals the idea. I know that in my mind is arising the thought that my mind is in my brain. Where is this awareness that reveals the thought? The fifth question is, where does the mind go? Everything goes someplace. The day goes into the evening. The rubbish is collected. Does the mind go somewhere? These are the 5 questions by which we can investigate if the mind is a thing like every other thing. Can we catch the mind? Can we categorize it? Can we see it as having defining features? If the mind is not like that, and the mind is not a thing, then grasping cannot catch the mind. We grasp at things, and the things we grasp at are concepts. When you go outside onto the street, you'll see a car. It's obvious to you that you see a car. The concept car and the object are married together. The concept car is linked with language, since different languages have different words for car. Car is a conventional term. What is actually there? Some people think cars are polluting the environment. Other people think they're very useful. What you call a car is revealed through interpretation. If you don't apply a concept to the car, what is there? How would you describe it? To describe something is to pull it into concept. But the shape is there, even before the concept. You don't have to believe what I'm saying. It's just a suggestion you can investigate for yourself. There would not be car without your mind doing car. When a fly lands on a car, it is not landing on a car. When a bird shits on a car, it's not shitting on a car, not for the bird. How much longer are you going to be a human being? Maybe 50 years if you're young or lucky. For many people, it is less. Another 20? 10? 5? After that, you won't be looking with human eyes. It is a different world. It is amazing. If you were a cat, would you like cars? Cars are very useful for cats because they can hide under them. They look for small spaces where they can't be seen. If you start walking through the world as a cat, it would be completely different. This is a basic Dzogchen practice. Spend a day as a cat, for example. Then the colors and shapes of the world are reconstituted according to catness. Flies become very interesting because you're a cat. Cars are interesting because you are a human, and you are a human for a while. As a human, this is how it comes together. It doesn't come together like this for a cat. There is not inherent truth in the object. There is not inherent existence in the object. If you watch a TV program about elephants, you'll be amazed at how they operate together as big families. They seem so amazing. While you are watching this on the television, someone in Africa with a chainsaw is cutting the tusks off a living elephant. How is this possible? Because they look at the elephant and they see money. We look at the elephant and we see something different. The truth is not out there, because if everybody feels what I feel about the elephants, they wouldn't be stealing their tusks and selling them. It is relative, which is why Dharma practice usually begins with taking refuge. Because when you come out from behind the veil of your assumptions, samsara is a very scary place. On the level of manifestation, everything is relative, which is why we apply these five questions. We want to see if the mind itself is relative. Is it shifted by the emergence of other phenomena? So we sit for a while with these questions. We are here. This is the revelation of our awareness. We are present, and this presence seems to be self-illuminated by the brightness of our mind, which reveals whatever is occurring. Where is this? Is it resting in some place? Is it inside the body? Outside the body? Above the body? Below the body? In another planet? Where is it? We are here. Mind is here. When you're investigating these questions, you may get a little bit distracted or sleepy. Don't get lost in that. If you need, take a big breath and slowly breathe out to energize yourself a little. The main thing is not to go into thought stimulation. We are very biased towards relying on thoughts. Our tendency is to trust thoughts. But from the point of view of this practice, the thought is the child. The child is the display of the mother. It comes out of the mother. The mother always knows more about the child than the child knows about the mother. Awareness is open. The thought is a formation which is arising and passing. It is unrealistic to think the child thought is going to tell you about the mother. Stay with the mother, with mind itself. Your mind is here. Don't confuse the mind and the content of the mind. The mind doesn't move. The content of the mind is always moving. When you are inquiring about these five questions, some propositions may arise for you. And they may seem to be true. Just stay with them. If it's the child, it will be in movement and it will vanish. The mind doesn't move. The mirror doesn't move. The reflections move in the mirror. Does the mind go anywhere? If your mind really vanishes, you would have no experience at all. Something is occurring. The mind is here. Is it going away? You can return to these five thoughts again and again. You can find many discussions about these five questions in Dzogchen texts. They talk about the nature of the mind and how the mind is. With these five questions, you can get very close to yourself in the moment of being here. The mind is present. It shows its presence as your presence. Who is the one who is here? Is it a who? Is it a what? Is to be present as someone? We all know how to be here as ourselves. I am me, in my body, with my thoughts, my memories. That's the familiar way in which we weave together the shaping of our identity. But identity is movement. It is activity. If you don't do, then you won't get the identity. The mind is not doing anything, in the same way as the mirror is not doing anything. The mirror doesn't get tired. It doesn't get worn out by showing lots of reflections. The mind doesn't get worn out because it is not working to show. It is just showing. Illumination is how the mind is, inherently bright. This is your mind. It is not the Buddha's mind somewhere else. So, if you sit down and you feel tired or a little heavy, this is an experience arising. If you go to the theatre and the lights don't work, it's not much of a show. No matter how good the dancers are, you have to be able to see them. Likewise, feeling dull and heavy and stupid is the play of your mind. Put the lights on. You know you feel dull and heavy and stupid. But if you merge into the arising feeling of being, oh, so tired, then you are blinding yourself to the fact that tired is an experience that is emerging. It wasn't there before. It arose due to circumstances, and after a while, it will vanish. It is not who you really are. So, in that very moment, when feeling arises, whatever it is, happy or sad, expansive or contractive, don't merge with it. Don't stand apart from it. Just be present with it in the way that the mirror is present with the reflection. At first, these instructions may not mean very much, but if you spend some time getting to know how you are, not what you are, but how you are, you will see that the clarity of the mind is a constant display of movement. Teaching given in Warsaw over the 14th to 15th of December 2019. Edited by Barbara Terrace and James Lowe. From the book The Open Door of Emptiness by James Lowe. Read by Wendy, March 2025.